form a chain, bailing out the stinking yellow water by hand. A senior overseer had suggested that the excavation could resume once the level dropped below a man's knees. Semyonian had smiled gently and suggested that perhaps it could begin again once the water was less than waist-deep. A suggestion from the bald Russian was something like a message from the Almighty, hewn from granite. Three of the older workers had drowned in the first hour, but the sodden corpses had been quickly removed before Zemyanin came around on his tour of inspection. Since he'd taken over the mining complex, the Russian had managed to improve production, mainly by bringing in ruthless set guards to drive the slave laborers on. But the linked chambers, tunnels, and shafts were still chaotically under-mechanized. A few gas engines powered hoists and elevators, but virtually everything in the mines was still man and woman powered. If a worker from a medieval sulfur mine had been miraculously transported to Zemyanin's complex, he'd have found very little changed. A bird's nest of rickety wooden ladders held together by frayed lengths of rope, smoking oil lamps that gave a frail yellow light, leaving great lakes of black shadow. Narrow passages where a man could hardly stand upright that linked up with other equally stooped tunnels. To reach the main working areas from the entrances in the valley floor could take more than half an hour, involving as many as 20 ladders. Descending into foul air and a slippery ochre ooze. Each work period lasted 12 hours. Food was dragged down in iron pots so that it was as cold as stone by the time most workers received it. Two ladles of cornmeal mush and a hunk of bread were served up halfway through the shift. Rusting oil drums were filled with water and placed at the end of each main gallery in the mine. But within a few minutes, a scum of yellow sulfur powder would form on its top, thickening during the 12 hours. Permission to drink was needed from the armed sekmen who patrolled the mine, each of them only working below ground for 3 hours at a spell. Bodily functions were exercised in the darker corners of the mine. Dean Carter had been in worse places in his young life. The survival skills that he'd learned in ducking and dodging were invaluable in the depths of Zemyanin's mine. Even in the short time that he'd been a prisoner in the freezing north, the boy had learned what could and couldn't be done. Being small and slight, he could weave his way through the midnight crevices, slipping away from the attention of the guards and shepherding his energy by digging and carrying as little as possible. Dean also contrived to get to the food first, stuffing himself with a tasteless gruel. He watched other slave workers, not used to the hardship, turning their noses up at the food. By the time the hunger drove them to accept the gray sludge, they'd already become weakened. And soon, they'd be dead.
I hope the inclement weather has not meant hardship for the workers.
Zemyanin paused to wipe the yellow muck from his high leather boots. His overseers were now used to the odd way that the pockmarked baron spoke to them.
No, Major Commissar. No problem with them at all.
Sekman Benson's fingers crossed behind his back that the Ruski didn't learn about the drowned corpses. Zemyanin didn't have a reputation for liking men who lied to him. The last Sekman he'd caught in an untruth had been crucified upside down over a slow fire. The Russian stood, legs slightly apart, hands locked behind his back, surveying the main galleries. The workers scurried over the scaffolding and ladders like golden ants. A group of laborers trudged by, the guard/foreman at their heels, a carbine slung over his shoulder. They all paused at one of the water butts, immediately in front of the Russian and his aides.
There's been a slide in Tunnel 3, Major Commissar.
Slow work?
No.
You are certain?
Yes, Major Commissar.
I shall peruse the control invoices for Tunnel 3 on the morrow. I trust that you will be correct in your judgment.
Despite the bitter chill of the afternoon, the man's forehead was suddenly beaded with sweat.
Sure thing, Major Commissar. No problems.
Semyonian patted him on the shoulder, his lips parting in the thinnest and bleakest of smiles.
I am sure of that.
The workers were filing past, all gulping down a ladle of the filthy water. They were of all shapes and sizes. Last in line was the smallest of the shift, a skinny youth whose face and head were covered in a mask of sulfur.
Well, there's someone who's been working hard, Major Commissar.
Someone who hopes to make us believe that he has been working hard, you mean?
The boy seemed oblivious to them, swilling down a beaker of water and then stooping and leaning over the drum. He dipped his entire head below the surface and brought it out again, shaking himself like a dog after a swim.
Wipe his face, then show him to me.
What?
Zemyanin swung his right fist around and drove it into the overseer's lower stomach. Foreman Franklin, stout and wearing multi-layered furs, doubled over as though he'd been shot. Zemyanin grabbed him by the back of the head and brought his knee up sharply into the foreman's face. The Russian ignored his victim as he slumped to the wet stone, rolling on his side, unconscious. He turned to his sec boss.
Wipe his face, then show him to me.
Yes, Major Commissar, at once.
The boy glanced up at Zemyanin, shrugging off the hand of the sec man.
I can wash my own face.
He dashed more water over his head, streaks of crusted sulfur running over the chiseled planes of his high cheekbones. He rubbed his sleeve across his mouth and eyes, then spat on the floor.
Look at me, boy.
Yes, Major Commissar.
Grigory Zemyanin stared intently at Dean Carter. The light was very poor in the gallery of the mine, but he still had the nagging suspicion that he should recognize the boy.
Your name?
Will Good.
Of course. I saw you when you arrived here. I warned you about...
A tiny alarm bell began to ring in a distant, dusty room at the back of Zemyanin's mind. He hadn't been a senior officer in the internal security section for the whole of the massive village of Mukba for nothing. He had great cunning and deductive powers, linked with a ferocious intuition. There had been a corpse found in... No, there had been two corpses, both slaughtered with great skill by someone who had a delicate touch with a knife. The boy stood still, not shifting his feet or showing any discomfort. There was something about the mat of black curly hair and the determined jaw that tugged at the Russian's memory. He waved his hand at the young man.
Very well. You may leave us for the present, but I might require your attendance at some later time. Go now, Master Good.
Dean Carter nodded and turned away to follow the rest of his working party, leaving Grigory Zemyanin looking after him with a thoughtful expression on his face. Ryan had been winded by the fall, landing belly down in the shallow lake, but he recovered consciousness in a few minutes, kicking out. His feet flailed against the rounded boulders that lined the bottom of the icy pool, and he quickly looked around to get his bearings. The drop had torn the ragged cloth from his hands, and he saw Kate floating a dozen yards away from him, arms and legs spread wide. His own body felt swollen and stiff, as though someone had injected all his arteries and muscles with a mix of frozen concrete. It took an enormous effort of will for Ryan to force himself toward the young woman, stumbling chest deep. When he reached her, Ryan slid a hand under her chest and turned her, managing to support her head. She lolled in his arms, her eyes closed, a thread of blood oozing from her blue, parted lips.
Kate!
There was no movement. His fingers were too numb to try to locate a pulse, so he simply dragged her out of the pool onto a shingled beach. He rolled her onto her stomach, pumping at her, kneeling astride her hips.
Come on, you stupid bitch, or we'll both freeze to death.
He thumped her between the shoulders with clenched fists. The girl started moving her hands feebly to try to push the small stones away from her face.
Better?
Terrible.
Gotta keep moving. Find someplace to try and get warm.
Oh, Judith on the tree.
Get up.
Ryan stood himself, rocking a little with a nauseous vertigo, and reached down and grabbed Kate by the wrist.
You ever give up, do you, Ryan?
Never.
He'd managed to work out where they were, marveling at the weaving extent of their perilous journey, far within the heart of the surrounding mountains. Allowing for the doubling and snaking of the river, Ryan's guess was that they traveled 10 or 15 miles. But as the crow flew, they were less than 4 miles away from the part of the canyon where the mines were situated. From the position of the clouded sun, it seemed to be late afternoon. Not far from the lake, Ryan and Kate found shelter in caves, less than 5 feet high and only a dozen feet deep, that looked like they went back 1,000 years or more.
Valley must flood. Lots of driftwood caught on this corner.
Kate was close to comatose, lying just within the cave opening, eyes shut, her hands folded across her breasts. She hadn't spoken another word to him, and had passively let him heave her into the shelter. Ryan dragged a couple of armfuls of the brushwood, trying to dust some of the powdery snow off the dry branches. With the panga, he managed to whittle a few slivers of bark, laying them in a circle, piling on some larger chips. His fingers wouldn't cooperate in the struggle, and he kept dislodging the base